The study is a self-funded and self-motivated project, so when I sit in my study and ponder the choices I have, I do tend to need some rationale for it. If I can offer some of my thinking. The opening ceremony of the Sydney Olympics in 2000 was celebrated as a great pageant of Australian life, and rightly so in many ways. Its representation of Indigenous and other aspects of our culture was quite laudable. But maybe I took a toilet break at the wrong moment. I didn't see any representation of our intellectual life. Amongst all the Blundstone Boots and Victor Mowers, where were the scientists, the writers, the artists? There was a reference to Sidney Nolan's Ned Kelly paintings, a brief appearance by Yvonne Kenny was all we got for high culture. The ceremony reached a high point when three people were wheeled out on big white pedestals. At least two of them were of dubious merit, even for fans of popular culture. Depending on how you define an Australian, we've won up to 9 Nobel Prizes, or 7 then and 2 since the Games. All but one of these, Patrick White in literature, were in science and mostly biomedical science, an area where we are told we punch above our weight. One of those Nobel Prize winners, Peter Doherty, had won as recently as 1996. There was no pedestal for him, although I doubt that he'd want to get up on one. I think this reflects an anti-intellectual streak that runs deep in Australian life. I think it's supposed to be part of our larrikin character, but I also think it's a failure of character. It holds us back with regrettable consequences. We don't value education enough, especially we don't value research enough, something I put to Nancy Millis when she spoke about basic research. We don't value creative intellectual endeavour generally enough, so just see who gets the pedestals any day. There's a strange confluence of this attitude with that of the supposed economic rationalist bean counters. Shelley Gehr, a Sydney author, discusses this in a recent book called The Triumph of the Airheads. The bean counters insist on cutting funds from anything that doesn't attract a big enough market, not just philosophy, physics, but science in general, music and languages. But the university as an institutional ideal itself suffers. The pervasive postmodernist culture certainly doesn't care, being disdainful of all those things. So it's no wonder our universities have suffered such poor government support. But there lies the strength of the anti-intellectualism. The cutbacks have happened at the very time the universities have proven their strength in the global education market. Any agricultural sector that was achieving the same degree of success would be getting strong assistance. Another thing, a few years ago, a major anniversary of Gallipoli occurred, and the last handful of old diggers received a lot of media attention. Everyone wanted to interview them. I've no argument with that. I just think that there are also many old people who worked long and distinguished careers in the arts, the humanities and the sciences, who are left now to die away unacknowledged. One could argue that each of the last 4 centuries was a watershed in science, but none was more tumultuous than the 20th century. We still have among us many whose lives span most of that century, yet they are passing from us unnoticed. And of course, many in fact are still working. They have stories that should be told and should be known to the public. The study interviews try to redress this situation in some way. It's about intellectual history. The great philosopher and mathematician A.N. Whitehead once wrote a book called Adventures of Ideas. Itself an idea that appeals a lot to me.